There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post-Wrestle.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
I've been told the Netflix numbers. I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times. I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
The whole part of the show, man.
Hello, everybody. It is John Pollock and Brandon Thurston. Joining us today will be Paul Levesque to break down big data and panel. Are those numbers going to make any more sense to him? Oh, wait. I just got an email. Scratch that. Hello, Brandon. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing wonderful. We're starting the countdown, everybody. The wrestling industry, as we know it, as a television property, it's coming to an end. This is going to be the final year of Hiroshi Tanahashi, John Cena, and wrestling television. It's all coming to an end. It's cratering. We have got numbers to dissect. We've got SmackDown numbers. We've got Collision numbers. Plenty. Some original reporting from our man Brandon Thurston, who is going to be going through some government records that he got his hands on. Is there a Hulk Hogan malpractice lawsuit in the near future? Who are being deposed in the all-star lineup that is the WWE shareholder lawsuit? So much to get into.
We even had a Bushiroad shareholders meeting. Nothing really newsworthy, but we do have a transcript of it that is translated by machine learning into English.
What is the difference? Tell me, what's the difference here between like Greco-Roman wrestling and the G1? Like, what's the difference between these two things? Because as a Bushiroad shareholder, I would want to know that question.
That there's discussion of that in the Bushiroad. Did I say it's a New Japan shareholder? A Bushiroad shareholders meeting. Where there were questions raised by shareholders about what the difference is between it translated to student wrestling, but I think they meant amateur wrestling. And the difference is that you make money in pro wrestling was the gist of the response, and that there are costumes perhaps also in pro wrestling.
Was that the implication? You don't make money in amateur wrestling, like as a business, or they're speaking as like the performers, athletes themselves making money.
I think the latter, although
both are pretty much true. I mean, as I'm sure real American wrestling is, real American freestyle is probably learning, a lot tougher to make money in amateur wrestling than it is pro.
Yes. And I don't know if NIL has reached Japan yet.
Well, we will find out. I'm sure that's not the deal that Aaron Wolf is on with New Japan Pro Wrestling, but we're going to start off by going back to All In Texas. And man, they went all in with the government and Brandon Thurston. Our esteemed colleague has just dropped the story that he has obtained the government records. When those are the first two words, you know that SEO coin is coming your way. Government records reveal AEW All In Texas attendance and public funding. And from Brandon's story, records obtained by WrestleNomics, the governor's office initially approved just over $1 million in combined state and local funding to help cover expenses for AEW's biggest event of the year. AEW will end up getting somewhat less than that amount because attendance for the event at Globe Life Field in Arlington was lower than expected. The funding approval was based on estimated attendance of 33,490, including 32,500 spectators, which was projected in February. After the July 12th show, officials submitted documentation certifying actual attendance at 23,759, including 21,973 spectators.
Yes. So this is a scan count. This is a dreaded turnstile count. I did choose not to use that word. So this is not the number of tickets sold, apparently. This is not the number of tickets distributed. Tony Khan did say that there were almost 29,000 when we're all said and done, was one of his comments on the post-show press conference. So could be in some form close to that. WrestleTix did estimate over 27,000. 27,245 was the final estimate for WrestleTix. So that's what we have. And oftentimes the number of tickets that are actually used is lower than the tickets sold even.
Right, which would be, I mean, we're talking like a, 19% difference, which is a little above what we typically see when it comes, when we do get the rare turnstile count in differentiation. I mean, that's kind of the 5 to 10% is usually the normal range.
What's more and even more exciting here is that I got data that the governor's office gave me, the governor's office sort of gave me a spreadsheet and... but didn't actually give me the spreadsheet. I think they will later. The law will require them to. But I reconstructed the spreadsheet, and we have the seats for every single seat that actually had a ticket that was scanned for it. And because I was working with our friend Mr. WrestleTix leading up to this event and the months leading up to the event, we had to do a lot of complicated stuff to try to rule in and rule out certain seats. So I had all the XY values. I had all the coordinates already ready to create the image that you can see. That's part of this article. If you want to, there's a chart just dedicated to this. If you want to hover and look at all the seats that were, you know,
so let's just recap. This was not provided to you. You constructed this chart based on this, spreadsheet that was sent to you.
They gave me so open up an Excel spreadsheet and then save it as a PDF. It looks like what they did. So I have this spreadsheet that's just, it's thousands of pages long. It's strewn across many pages horizontally. But that's what we have Python for.
Those 24-inch Pythons at work over at WrestleNomics HQ. So, I mean, you know, I think this does give you some kind of insight that there is certainly with these government funds, a certain projection that was put out there. And it would certainly tell you, like, you know, tickets for this event, it didn't get off to a gigantic start. And it was only as we got toward it that they started to see a lift going into July 12th over those last couple of weeks. But it tells you, I think, still that this was now the gate figure was not included in any.
We have no gate information. We know that Tony Khan said at one point leading up to the event that it passed 2.5 million and that he believed that it would reach 3 million. I don't believe he made any comments after that, though. So taking his word as it is, this did somewhere over $2.5 million for a gate.
So, I mean, this is still among the all-time highest gates in AEW's history, like taking out the Wembley shows.
Right. Probably the highest, if not for the two Wembley shows.
Yeah, that would be number three.
And I think he said as much, that it was the highest North American gate. Anyway.
From this, what else were you able to obtain in your digging that you were able to find out?
It looks like there were a number of events that were initially at least planned on paper that were to happen at the Esports Stadium. Despite being a stadium, it's a relatively small event compared to major arenas. But they were in this big application that they had to submit, which also included an estimate of the number of spectators who would attend. And they're also considering the staff, the talent, the personnel who are going to work the show, who are also traveling in mostly from outside the area. They're going to consume hotels and food and shopping and everything. And that's going to help create a positive economic impact for the local area. Anyway, they submit this big package, and included in it was a list of events that were going to take place, including some events that never took place, that were never announced. So, of course, we have All In itself. We have Ring of Honor, Supercard of Honor that did take place at Esports Stadium. We have the StarCast event that did take place at the Sheraton Arlington Hotel. But also, there was this CMLL. It's written like this: CMLL Lucha Libre Resurgence, that was at least at some point planned to take place at the Esports Stadium. That would have been on the Thursday night, I believe this is. And then there's an AEW Music Showcast featuring Fozzy and Swerve that would have happened as part of this weekend on the Friday. And a New Japan Strong Style event that is entered in here as 11 a.m. on Saturday at Esports Stadium. There's another music event here as well, wasn't there? Maybe not. But there's also
maybe that would be the after party after CMLL Lucha Libre.
There's also an AEW Fan Fest and Collision that they say would happen at noon on Saturday. The New Japan show is listed here is for, yeah, it's Saturday. So anyway, the Fan Fest and Collision listed here for Saturday at the Texas Live CBD Crotum Backyard, which is apparently a concert venue that is very close by Globe Life Field, where it all took place. So, of course, Collision did not take place on Saturday. It took place on Thursday, airing live on TNT the night after Dynamite was also taped at the Curtis Caldwell Center, which is in Garland, Texas, which is like an hour drive away from Arlington. So that did not happen in Arlington, but an hour away. So, yeah, a CMLL and a New Japan show apparently were planned enough that they submitted it to the state.
Yeah, I mean, the way that this was structured, certainly they were looking at making this, like, I think we could take this as sort of a template. Like, if Tony wants to, in fact, do this sort of mini kind of festival to counter WrestleMania in Saudi Arabia in 2027, I think you could be looking at some kind of similar setup to this when it comes to like a US based event with surrounding conventions and shows that it
and
would
there
kind
were some
of replicate
GCW this. Shows that surrounded this, right? This is yeah. When the Sabu match happened?
No, that was back WrestleMania weekend.
My bad.
Sabu had passed by this point.
But so it's it really This presents a structure that would look very much like what WWE does in, you know, for its WrestleMania weekend. This is an AEW version of it, you know, where you'd have takeovers and all these other shows surrounding it. So this would have been an even bigger weekend had they done it. But maybe given that the attendance, given that they overshot on their own attendance. Now, mind you, this is February that they submitted this application where they listed 32,500 was their estimated number of spectators. And I believe that refers specifically to the big event, All In. It is not sort of a summing of all of the events. So 32,500, and they ended up certifying just under 22,000. And I looked back at what WrestleTix had estimated as tickets distributed on the nearest day after they submitted this on February 4th. And on February 9th, WrestleTix had the estimated tickets distributed at that time as somewhere over 11,000, but under 12,000. So it seems like kind of a lofty estimate to anticipate that you're going to draw 32,000 when if WrestleTix was accurate, which it, you know, in the final number, it seems to have been fairly accurate, to think that while you had between 11 and 12,000 tickets distributed somewhere in that ballpark that you're going to draw 32 is quite lofty.
Yes. Brandon also mentions attendees from 49 of the 50 U.S. states, Puerto Rico and Washington, D.C. were accounted for. Wyoming, they were
no
not.
No Wyoming.
They weren't into Hangman going for this belt. They were Death Riders fans.
So somebody from Wyoming could have attended because there are of these 27,000 people. I'm sorry. Is it 21,000 of the 21,000 whose tickets were scanned, we don't have residence geolocation data for over 5,000 of them. So this is like 68 68% are accounted for here. And I put them in their designated market area, which are these like Nielsen defined categories, and sort of color coded them in a nonlinear form for people who are watching a video or want to seek this out in the article form. A lot of Southern California, right? A ton of Texas, as you would expect. A lot of Oklahoma. This makes sense. So the closer you were to it, sort of the more likely you were to travel. And we see some density in large geographical locations like New York City area, Washington DC area, the Chicago area, Southern California, Southern Florida, places like that.
Maybe those AEW fans in Oklahoma, they were making the trip to hopefully see Nyla Rose be able to wrestle in person.
Yes. Well, AEW has not gone back to Oklahoma yet, I don't think. Correct?
I don't believe they have.
Yeah, we'll see.
We would have to double check that. Okay. Also mentioned here that a contract with the city of Arlington shows that AEW paid, they paid $23,000 to rent the city-owned eSports stadium where the ROH pay-per-view took place. One draft of the contract shows suggested changes from a member of AEW's legal team that highlights the company's efforts to control information. AEW sought to insert provisions that would have committed the city to keep secret any attendance information and help AEW make trade secret claims if there was a legal requirement to publicly reveal the numbers. The suggested confidentiality clause would have the city agree not to publish or disclose attendance figures, turnstile counts, drop counts, ticket numbers, revenue, box office receipts, and similar information, except when disclosure would be legally unavoidable. But under Texas statutes, this was not going to be possible. And thus,
it looks like under Texas law, you can't do that. And I did speak with the city manager of Arlington, who is Mr. Yelverton, Trey Yelverton. And he was very nice and helpful and spoke with me on the phone and sent me an email as well. And he explained that they couldn't agree to that. Now, this was, let's be very clear, that this was a part of the eSports Stadium agreement. We do have the Event Trust Fund agreement that is connected to this whole weekend, and it's connected to the Globe Life Field event. And there, I don't have any drafts. I can't tell you that they proposed the same thing for that contract. And maybe this just sort of rendered any effort to do that moot anyway. But this was specific to the eSports Stadium rental. But yes, there are very few cases, is my understanding, where you as a public entity can agree to preemptive arbitration. That's a different thing. So they said that they couldn't agree to this. Mr. Yelverton said that he couldn't agree to this anyway. But they want to withhold make sure that their attendance information is not released to certain people who would, be very annoying and want to publicize and help people understand AEW's business, particularly when it comes to its interactions with government entities using taxpayer dollars and things like that. They want not only for the government entity that they're working with here to agree to keep that secret, but if they had to disclose that information and were forced to by law, AEW wants advanced notice, and they want your promise that you are going to help them argue that this is a trade secret that should be accepted from any such laws that would cause this to be disclosed.
Will you be seeking out information for the now that we have a date, the June 14th, 2026 UFC event on the White House lawn? Think of the disclosures.
Most likely. Think of the FOIA opportunities there. Yeah.
Could be something. Really great reporting here by Brandon. I encourage everyone to go read his whole report up at WrestleNomics.com. Great breakdown.
Talk about the arbitration?
The arbitration? Yeah. Why don't you go through that?
So they also wanted the city to agree to an arbitration clause, which we published what their proposed arbitration clause was in full. I want to emphasize too, this arbitration clause was not included in the final agreement. The confidentiality clause that they wanted was not included in the final agreement, but we do have essentially a Word document or a Google Doc that shows a member of AEW's legal team suggesting these sort of as suggested edits. And perhaps this gives us an idea of what AEW's arbitration clause preferences for what kind of language they want to put in here. Arbitration, remember, is a private forum where you don't have you don't get to have a trial in public court. There's an arbitrator who will decide it for you privately. It's a confidential process where it's hard to get evidence. It's hard to file any sort of appeal. And they wanted an arbitration clause. They wanted the city to preemptively agree to resolve any disputes in arbitration. And that is an issue where there are very few cases where a city could in Texas agree to such a thing. So they cannot agree to that arbitration clause. We've seen arbitration become an issue in AEW lawsuits involving Nick Nemeth, involving Kevin Kelly and the Tate Twins, and the in both cases.
Just correct, Ryan Nemeth, not Nick Nemeth.
I'm sorry, Ryan Nemeth. And we've seen in both cases those disputes have been sent to arbitration. And most recently, in fact, by the way, the Kelly and Tate's appeal that they filed in the 11th Circuit, the appeals judge has said that we can't rule on this yet because it's only stayed and it hasn't been dismissed yet. So, I mean, look, our arbitration is a pretty secretive process where there doesn't get to be scrutiny. Annoying journalists don't get to report on it because it's a very secretive, closed off process. We believe that this is broadly in talent contracts. It's at least in Ryan Nemeth's contract and each of Kevin Kelly and the Tate Twins contracts. I think it helps powerful corporations broadly across the economy evade scrutiny. And the criticism of arbitration is that they have these arrangements with arbitration providers like JAMS, which is AEW's arbitration provider, and there is arguably a conflict of interest there when you have a business arrangement with an arbitrator who may be compelled to decide in your favor.
We thank our pal David Bixenspan for the super chat confirming, like Garfield.
It is the least populous state, Wyoming.
I mean, I am told Wyoming exists, but if not for the UFC, I would never have come across Wyoming in my life. But all due respect, if you live in Casper and you happen to go to All In Texas, please reach out to us and let us know, and we will correct the record. All right. Let us go on to our big discussion on big panel plus data, or big data plus panel. Sorry, everybody. I will also alert people that we did interview Douglas Pucci earlier this week from Programming Insider. And if you want to check out that interview, it's up on our YouTube channels going through kind of the methodology, how Programming Insider is reporting on the new figures and such. And so we got the latest SmackDown viewership numbers. And just about an hour ago, the Saturday night figures came down for both the UFC 320 prelims and for AEW Collision. And we'll start off with SmackDown. So last week, under the new methodology, SmackDown had fallen to about 1,235,000 viewers, roughly, and a 0.35 in the demo. And this week, it fell to 1,030,000 viewers and a 0.23. So we're talking a 17% decline and a 34% drop in 18 to 49 from last week.
And this... From last week was the new methodology. This week is the new methodology.
Yes. So this is comparing. If we were, because last week we got both sets of numbers, it would be an even more dramatic decrease if we were comparing it to the old methodology used last week. So we're only comparing it to the new methodology last week. So it's not even enhanced by an unlike comparison. So SmackDown did still rank. It ranked fourth among all TV programs on Friday in 18 to 49 and third on cable. Basically, it was only behind the WNBA finals and like a 12-minute program that followed the game on ESPN. So its ranking has not been obliterated, but these numbers represent all-time lows for SmackDown, save for the preempted shows that ran on FS1 during the Fox era. But like, we are talking like catastrophic declines here where... at this rate, there will be a SmackDown that falls under 1 million viewers. And this did not even have the cushion of airing against like a big Major League Baseball playoff game that, at least when we look at Tuesday's numbers that have not come out yet, there is that factor that you're going against the playoffs. The only significant sports that they were up against was game one of the WNBA playoffs, which did like a 0.44. It's a great number for the WNBA, but not one that you would look at as, you know, sending SmackDown to its all-time lowest numbers.
Yeah, I think it's notable that we talk about the rank and how important that is when, as far as being a reflection of media value. And as you mentioned, the WNBA finals.
Yeah, this was game one.
Was number one. The college football scoreboard, which was right after the game.
I mean, that's all the lead in from the WNBA game that basically was.
And that's not surprising. You know, SmackDown has often been number one, but there'll be sports that will push it out. But I think it's notable that the celebrity Wheel of Fortune on ABC measured higher at a 2.7 to SmackDown's 2.3. I mean, that's not the sort of thing I think that would be normal under the old method. So we're seeing some effect here on the ranking. It's the fact that from 1 week to another, we're seeing double-digit differences, like a 17% difference in total viewership, a 34% difference in the demo. I mean, that suggests there's instability or something in this methodology, but the weeks will show us as we get more data points.
Yeah, the UFC prelims are a little difficult to judge because this is really the first time we've seen like a UFC set of prelims, which, you know, typically do very well, but they were moved because of I believe it was whatever was on ESPN, the UFC prelims got moved to FX. So they did 519,000 viewers and a 0.17 on FX. So they were still fifth for the night, but this is on a much weaker network than ESPN, where typically they would be much higher if they had been positioned on ESPN. This was a fairly noteworthy pay-per-view, not like top tier, but I feel like it was, I don't know, it's kind of inconclusive if UFC is going to feel this the same brunt of this changeover. Saturday, Collision did 226,000 viewers and a 0.03 in the demo, which is a new low for the program in 18 to 49. They were down 9% in viewership from last week, which was also...
did start at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, we should admit it was preempted out of its normal time slot. So it aired from 7 till 9 p.m. on TNT, down 9% in viewers and down 40% in 18 to 49. And this was going up against a crazy lineup of college football on ABC, NBC, Fox, and also a Dodgers-Phillies game on TBS as well. So, I mean, Collision has not taken the sting in comparison to some of the other programs we've been monitoring, but you know, it's still Saturday night is already brutal, and now when you add in this new method as well, that's not helping things. And yeah, a 0.03 is nothing you're going to be celebrating. But again, this was also a Collision out of its regular time slot.
When's that TNA deal going to get announced?
Carlos Silva is like, we're right at the end. We're right about to announce it. It's going to start in January. We will see. We will see what happens here. Have you had any further like insight into just this move over, theories you have seen about why pro wrestling is being, you know, is taking such a hit here? I will also refer people, Andy Nebity at WrestleJoy has written out a pretty extensive piece with his analysis of all of this and going through how the old model was measuring and then how it differs under this new system and the algorithm that is in place and how he theorizes why pro wrestling could be affected by this new model. But again, it's one that, like, we are not seeing sports as a whole, which is like longer form programming, taking any kind of an impact here. If anything, like NFL is dramatically increasing. We're seeing Major League Baseball playoffs doing great viewership. College football has been through the roof this year. It notes in his article, out of 174 networks, only 15 dropped by 20% or more. But yeah, this is, I would say, like, this is like, would be a prime concern to me if I was in WWE or AEW, of learning as much as I can about this system and if this is going to level off, or like, what is the cause that is
segmenting pro wrestling to such a degree that we are now posting all-time historic lows under this new model.
And I'm sure
that SmackDown number was alarming when you saw it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was working on this article around what it was 10 or 11. I saw that come in. Endeavor is a Nielsen customer. I would think they would be having emergency meetings with Nielsen to ask what's going on here. It's hard to say without knowing more about what what the details are of Nielsen's methodology in terms of how they're extrapolating their measurement onto the population. I can only think that, you know, just look at the areas, you know, the demographics where wrestling is over indexing or under indexing, I don't know, income level or something like that. Maybe that was being measured differently with one method versus the other.
Yeah. I mean, it's one where, I think you have to look at this over like where we are a month from now from all this, but like, for instance, like this Friday, SmackDown will not only, it has the potential of going up against, the deciding game if the Yankees Blue Jays series extends. It's also going to be a tape delayed episode of the show because it'll be airing live Friday morning internationally on Netflix from Australia. There is no sign that like this Friday is going to be any improvement over this past Friday's episode as well. And, you know, we will not get the Tuesday night numbers from NXT and AEW until Thursday, to see how this trend continues. But it's one that to me is just growing and growing to be a more significant story just in the television industry about pro wrestling that seems to have be leading the pack here of, ones that have been negatively impacted by this switch.
We don't have Tuesday data yet. Don't expect to come out until tomorrow afternoon, where NXT and Dynamite are running head to head.
Yes.
Sharing a wrestling audience.
With Major League Baseball going against them as well. I mean, who was not focused on the Toronto Blue Jays trying to eliminate the hated New York Yankees on Tuesday night? I mean, maybe that would chip away.
I mean, these shows, you know, cannibalizing each other. What do you think they're going to measure under the, I mean, spin the wheel.
It's very hard to forecast how either of those shows are going to do
something like that. Each.
I think you're going to see, you know, a chunk out of both of them. And I think NXT was significantly better promoted than the AEW show.
Dynamite's out of its time.
It's on
days,
a different night.
It's going to be lower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's one where I would not imagine like spectacular numbers for either side, that we're going to see on Tuesday, even when you don't factor in like the new model that these are being adjudicated under. I would recommend people check out this article at Russell Joy. It goes through a lot of the data and gets into the specifics about how the set-top boxes and smart TVs, like how it differs from how they're analyzing viewership versus the old method of Nielsen homes with people meters, and how pro wrestling might be part of this exemption when it comes to like longer programming such as sports, where it's designed to be able to figure in like longer programming where you might not be touching your dial for the duration of the program. You can go check that out and come to your own conclusion.
Consistent with a notion that, you know, if you're watching a wrestling show, given wrestling has all these discrete segments, and maybe I watch, you know, there's probably a greater diversity of total watch time for the viewers versus a baseball game, maybe, where you mostly watch all of it, let's say. Does that make sense? Like, so
it does.
If people are tuning in and tuning out of wrestling with just more frequency.
Yeah. And there's also there is a built-in mechanism that overcorrects for younger viewership. And if AEW and WWE are primarily targeting and attracting that younger audience, they might actually get penalized from this. But again, these are like theories at this point, and the best we can do is try to make our theories. But the bottom line is these are the numbers that are now being, these are going to be the gospel when it comes to the viewership that these are doing.
It's what ads are bought against.
That's it. It's like you can disagree with the methodology and how it's being done, but
unless Nielsen finds that there is a glitch in their system that has unfairly targeted pro wrestling versus all these other programs that are not suffering the effects of this. Like, these are the numbers that WWE and AEW, this is going to be the new normal, and that's what they're going to have to sell ads against, and that's what they're going to be judged upon when their deals come due. And maybe this is just going to be an aberration. Maybe these things are going to, the data will normalize over time, but all we can go by is what these early indications have been, and they've been pretty disastrous. And I don't think it's a, I don't think it's an over exaggeration to be alarmed by just how badly these shows have performed in the very short period.
So wait a minute. Can't we now finally say TV ratings don't matter?
Unless
TV rating, I watch everything on streaming or on my phone. TV ratings don't matter.
When WBD comes to AEW in a few years and says, you know what? You just write down the figure you think you guys are worth. We'll sign it. Don't worry about these charts. Don't worry about what we've seen. Just that's the day when television ratings don't matter to these networks.
TV ratings are hard to understand.
And they're harder than ever to understand. So a lot of people, it's very easy to just dismiss it because it's gotten extremely more complicated under this system. But they absolutely matter, or else they would not be like, you can diminish where cable is going, but it is not a dead business at present for any of these operators.
Things are hard to understand. It makes me feel better to say that they don't matter so that I don't need to understand them.
Yeah. And that's
they're not a clean reflection of popularity, which I think is the predisposed mindset that people are often trying to read TV ratings with. They're not telling you necessarily the trends in a wrestling program's popularity, because there are a lot of external factors. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's certain limitations we have when it comes, like, as we've talked about, like, we can't get the full grasp of AEW's reach because we don't have access to the HBO Max viewership. So, I mean, you can assign whatever value you want there, but ultimately, like, if you are WBD, you're looking at how many people is this show reaching, because the number of viewers that you have or the number of subscribers you have, like, there is a value you attach to each one of those. And it is, what can we convert into dollars from these people? And that's where this comes from. And it's one thing to measure popularity. It's another thing to look at, this is the number. How much can we extract from this audience? And some shows can do tremendously well with a limited audience, if it's more affluent, if you are reaching a certain demographic over another. And it's quite another when you have a big volume of people, but you can't make the money off of it. That was pro wrestling's Achilles heel for so long, was you could deliver these numbers, but they made so little off of that number that you can look at the Attitude Era and they were reaching like millions and millions, but their advertising did not reflect that because it was not a coveted audience.
And HBO Max is not being measured as of this moment by Nielsen. WBD said so, but somebody did make me aware, a subscriber made me aware, that there is this press release from last month. Warner Bros. Discovery and Nielsen signed multi-year measurement and analytics deal. And I believe this does say something about streaming. It says, let's see, blah, blah, blah. They have signed a new long-term multi-year deal effective immediately. The patch covers measurement for WBD platforms across linear and streaming. As part of the deal, WBD will expand its partnership with Nielsen and take on new services in 2026. So I think this does raise the question, come the new year, if they're going to be measuring HBO Max in any way that might include AEW viewership.
The great unknown that continues. So, yes, look out Thursday for the Tuesday head-to-head numbers between NXT and AEW Title Tuesday. To the shareholder lawsuit we go, and Brandon had this story a couple of days ago that TKO CEO Ari Emanuel, taking a break from his new podcast that is coming out, maybe he's going to talk about
the Mount Rushmore of shareholder lawsuits he's been deposed for, and where will the TKO WWE shareholder lawsuit rank in his Rushmore? He will be deposed under oath by attorneys representing a class of WWE shareholders on December the 2nd, according to new filings in Delaware's Court of Chancery. Emanuel, who negotiated the merger between Endeavor and WWE that created TKO, is expected to face questions about the terms of the deal and his communications with Vince McMahon leading up to the transaction. As well, former CEO and board member Stephanie McMahon will be deposed on October 24th. She resigned from the company shortly after her father returned to power in January 2023. Frank Riddick is going to be deposed on October 28th. And Brad Blum, a former executive and close associate of Vince McMahon, who now serves as president of McMahon's new venture, 14th and I, will be deposed on November 14th at WWE headquarters.
Yeah.
There's the headline. Brad Blum returns to WWE HQ.
I mean, they show you where these depositions are going to take place, mostly in law offices, but then they've got, I think, whatever the address is of W headquarters. I mean, I checked it is 707 Washington Boulevard, whatever it is. And I was like, oh, he's going back to, now this is the new headquarters. I think he was back for some of that time. I don't know. But everybody under the sun is being deposed for this. Anybody who was on the board during the M&A process, anybody who may have been a bidder in the M&A process, Vince is being deposed. Nick Khan is being deposed. Paul Levesque is being deposed. By the way, the defendants in this case are Vince, Nick, Paul, George Barris, and Michelle Wilson. A virtual Mount Rushmore of board members.
See?
So
how many episodes of WWE Unreal could you get out of this?
I think this would be great stuff. Now,
WWE Under Oath, the new Netflix original series.
I would tune in. Now we won't instantly get any access to these depositions unless they become, and it's usually just excerpts that become part of public record. If they are relevant enough for parties to want to include them as exhibits in later motions, or if this makes it all the way to trial, it may become part of public record in some form at that point. So these will happen. I mean, these are all scheduled to happen before the end of the year. And we'll be watching the docket. I mean, again, this is a case that's much further along than Vince's other lawsuits involving Janelle Grant and involving the Ring Boy lawsuits, which are still waiting for judges' decisions for both of those cases. But this is the depositions are going. And since it's not a federal case, it's not getting as much attention. But this is a very interesting case to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's, you know, it the core is the merger that occurred in 2023. But as we've seen, is like this very much does segue into, you know, Vince McMahon's removal from the company. Right. Why would other companies not want to retain a Vince McMahon? Like, it very much melds itself into the whole Vince McMahon.
It's very much intertwined with the Janelle Grant case in terms
exactly.
of it surrounds. It surrounds his exit from the company and the sexual misconduct allegations that are related to that.
And it's one of the reasons Vince McMahon has pushed back on a lot of this, of what is relevant right. to this case. And it's difficult because a lot of it is all baked in together.
Yeah. We should mention with Stephanie in particular. I mean, obviously, Stephanie is not an executive of WWE at this point, but she was the co-CEO in January 2023. And Vince, who was the controlling shareholder at that time, even though he had resigned for the first time, came back, decided to force his way back into the company. And she quickly resigned upon that happening. We don't know why. I suppose she'll be asked under oath. We'll see if we ever learn about that.
Maybe we'll get some dramatic readings of those emails from late December 2022. Vince McMahon perhaps decided, I'm unretired. Hulk Hogan's family has filed a petition in Pinellas County last week to seek a 90-day extension of Florida's statute of limitations to investigate a potential medical malpractice claim. The petition was filed on behalf of Hogan's widow, Melanie Sky Daly, his son Nick Bollea, and financial advisor, the all-too-powerful Terry McCoy, who are representing Hogan's estate. No lawsuit has been filed yet, and therefore, there are no defendants in this matter. But the filing states that the family wants to investigate claims against the Tampa General Hospital, Morton Plant Hospital, two Florida-based doctors, as well as any and all other applicable health care providers. The petition cites a Florida law that allows a prospective plaintiff to automatically extend the legal time limit for 90 days while evaluating whether to proceed with a malpractice lawsuit. So nothing yet filed, but at least they are keeping their options open that a lawsuit, you could certainly see coming out of this with this being a necessary step to take if they want to proceed.
Yeah, so this is consistent with things that Sky Daily had said leading up to this, right? It seems that they suspect that this neck surgery that he had in May 2025 may have led to his death in July. So what this petition is doing functionally is getting a 90-day extension on the statute of limitations, which is a 2-year statute of limitations in cases of malpractice in Florida. So it raises the question of why do you need a 90-day extension when you're dealing with a 2-year SOL where the clock just started running in, let's say, May. And I understand that this is just sort of standard legal practice to get an extension. I don't, maybe you find something that occurred in 2023 that is relevant, or maybe there may be other reasons, but I'm told that this is a standard thing to do in such a case. There's not, it does raise questions, but it seems like there's a reasonable legal explanation.
Yeah. And I mean, this also ties in, like, Brooke Hogan was brought down to Florida and she met with, you know, various, like, the people that basically with the police, and I mean, she kind of like threw a wet blanket on there being any wrongdoing. She felt pretty convinced that, you know, her concerns were alleviated. I don't know if she'll have any part in any of this. She is not part of the estate and seems very separate from this side of the family that is pursuing all of this, but yeah. I am sure, given the Hogan surname, this will get plenty of coverage if it moves forward. And yeah, Maybe its own Netflix original series.
It may or may not. Remember, this is not a lawsuit. This is, we're investigating the possibility of filing a lawsuit.
WWE and AEW, you went through how they performed in the month of September. And, I mean, this did include their 7-event stay at the 2300, the non-union 2300 arena in Philadelphia, where they got the local scab renamed. What was his name?
The
Scabby.
The
rat. It was renamed Roger.
Roger the rat. Yes. Named after the 2300 arena.
I mean, that was really the high point of September, was it not?
It was.
Kind of hard to look at AEW in that sense, when so many of their events were here at Philadelphia. They were basically like they filled the place for all these nights. It was a capacity of 916 people. And then their big event of the month was the All Out show in Toronto, which did 12,222. This was down 10% from their last time at the venue, which was Forbidden Door in 2003. And then we also have a comparison in Pittsburgh, which, you know, was a fairly good market for the company in its like earlier days, but I mean, it was way down for this recent return at the Peterson Event Center with just under 3,000 people, which was down from 4,500 for last year, which I believe was the 5th year anniversary show that they did year
ago. Would Baker have been on that show?
I believe she would have been there a year ago. That's almost the time that she was had disappeared. I do believe Britt Baker was on that show a year
ago. So we could say from this, Britt Baker is worth 1,500 fans, maybe.
That's it. The doctor was not in for the return.
But I do think this is the most meaningful comparison that we have in this month of September, right? We have a bunch of 2,300 arena shows. Okay, they went to capacity. The Toronto show was down from the last pay-per-view in Toronto, but we're talking about numbers of 12,000, 13,000.
And $1 million gate, according to Tony Khan.
Yeah. But this one, I think it tells you the most straightforward story is that this was a Dynamite in the same town, doing about 3,000, we're doing 2,900 versus 4,500, which is down substantially.
The WWE comparisons, it kind of shows like two separate stories here. We have like the first half of the month, like, you know, Chicago, always a big, strong area for them. I mean, they did 16,642. That was the episode that featured AJ Lee's return that was heavily hinted at in the lead up. Plus you had Punk on the show. And that was even higher than back in April by 5%. Then they followed up. They had big gains in Milwaukee and Norfolk, Virginia. And then we get into a Toledo SmackDown, which was pretty much comparable. It was down 4%.
The Indianapolis pay-per-view, we're going from Royal Rumble, which was at the stadium, to the arena. So that one's kind of, that's an outlier. Slightly down in Evansville, Indiana. But then at the end of the month, we see the SmackDown in Orlando, which, I mean, these are good. Anytime you're doing over 10,000, that's a very good attendance. But when we are comparing it, like, there is a bit of a softening here from their last time. They were down 25% at the Kia Center for the September 26th SmackDown, and then down 16% when they went to Raleigh, North Carolina for Raw on September 29th, down 16% in attendance. So, I mean, it's...
I always have to add the caveat when we're talking about WWE these days. How do the gates compare? We don't know. Right. The gates might have been higher with fewer fans if the ticket prices are up more than the differences in estimated tickets distributed here. This could just be a matter of raising prices that has lowered demand, but that has increased revenues.
A unified platform, more personalization, more customization.
I love it. Yeah. So who knows?
You know, as he said, he hates first day sellouts. Okay.
That's right. Don't sell out instantly. Price it so aggressively that you get the most money out of people.
And
that's how capitalism works. Yeah.
If you sell out in Des Moines and you want us to come back, you're going to pay for it. Don't sell out. If you're a fan of WWE, don't buy too many tickets, because if you sell out, it's going to be a lot harder to get a follow-up event.
Call your local sports commission and tell them to pay big money for WWE to come to town.
Yeah, find your version of Patrick Talty at the Indiana Sports Corp and bring WWE to you. It's going to cost you an arm, leg, and who knows how much else, but they will come, but you're going to pay for it.
But let's talk about the general trends real quick, because this is the end of Q3. We could just have like a spontaneous Q3 investors analysis here. We do have Raw still up in Q3.
I don't want to get a cease and desist from Josh Nason, but we are talking about WWE here at the moment.
Well, he does AEW, so it's fine. And we have SmackDown, 11,600 from 12,000 the prior year. So that's, you could call that for virtually flat. Raw up, okay. But we do see some weakening in the market to market comparisons. Again, price could be, ticket price affected. And we're seeing Dynamite way down. And that's part of that is residencies, but also residencies are, that's the new strategy because of weakening attendance historically up to this point. And Collision, these are the events that are solely Collision without Dynamite that are down as well.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like AEW, it remains at outside of pay-per-views, and even this upcoming Wrestle Dream show, I mean, it has not done tremendous advance here coming up. The pay-per-view is a week from Saturday. It's on October 18th, and the last number we have for WrestleTix is 4,200 that they have out for that show. So it's going to be a big drop-off from All Out. But, I mean, their TVs, like, we're talking like 2,800 last night at Daly's Place. It's like just under 1,900 for tonight at Daly's Place. They've got 1,400 next week in Kansas City. And then coming out of the pay-per-view, you got like 1,500, 1,300, 1,200. Houston, there's a show under 800 tickets out at this point. Like, that's just kind of the level AEW is at. And I don't sense any dramatic uptick coming anytime soon. WWE, I would still categorize them as pretty hot. Yeah, like, at most, you can say there's been a slight leveling off. But again, without knowing the gate figures that Brandon brings up, like, again, you can't make a fully formed view of that, because they could sell less tickets and they're just selling them at higher margin points. And we know how they love their margins.
Yes.
All right. Few more things to go through. We have the Raw viewership data from last week. So this was the final week where it aired at 7 p.m. And suffice to say, are they going to be done with the 7 p.m. experiment permanently, Brandon? We had 2.3 million views and 4.5 million hours viewed. This would equal the previous week's Raw in terms of views when it comes to their all-time lowest on Netflix. They ranked 8th globally and 7th in the United States among the 6 countries where it ranked. SmackDown last Friday, by the way, it ranked in one country in the entire world in the top 10. Do you want to guess what that one country was that placed Friday's SmackDown in the top 10 when it got destroyed on the USA Network.
Was it Canada?
Canada. They tuned in to SmackDown because, my God, they were going to see Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton team up. They were just captivated. Not Bolivia, not Ecuador, Canada, the only country where it ranked. But Raw, six countries, and they go back. Well, they went back to 8 p.m. this past Monday, and the next Mondays will be at 8 a.m. Eastern time because of the show in Perth.
Yeah, I mean, it's the lowest number so far, tied. I was struck by how exactly matched they were, both in terms of global views and hours viewed. Granted, we're only getting to the nearest 100,000 in both of those cases. But it was the lowest to date. And what does my estimate say? That it is, I mean, it's not like it's dramatically based on my estimate of the based on what we know about the debut and where it is now. That's not dramatically below where it was last year yet.
No, we're not there yet. But let's just be honest, like, wrestling programming, it's coming to an end, right? We're going back. I think we're going back to a live event only business.
I mean, it depends on how.
A Northeast regional business, okay? The fear that Vince McMahon had in 1997. Couldn't afford Bret Hart's contract. He was going to scale things back. I think that's where the business is headed.
I mean, that would be good for engagement, and good, which is good for us.
Monthly shows at the Garden, and that's it. I think that's what they should do.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting close to compared to the old schedule.
And TKO, they will report their third quarter earnings on Wednesday, November the 5th.
They certainly
at
will.
5 p.m. Just a dreadful time, as always, to do their call and report all these things. But that is coming up next month. And yeah, we will see. Maybe we will get some insight into the ratings debacle if it continues over this next month. The debut on ESPN, we will be over a month.
I think if they were having that earnings call today, I think that's a question that analysts would ask about what does this mean for your TV rights?
Yeah. A lot of times we'll talk about like various stories that are not really going to cross over to that type of audience. But I think the ratings issue, especially if this persists over the next few weeks, I do feel that will be one that it's only going to grow in terms of a concern because they're just so tied to their biggest revenue generator that it's will be interesting what their theories are when they have another month to kind of assess this data and come up with their rationale for it and why there should not be panic.
Yes. And by the way, I know you kind of scratched it off the list, but I did put together a highlight reel of the TED Talk.
Oh,
Triple H did. Yes. So are you ready?
If you missed it, here are the highlights.
What we do is it for what we do. So of what we do, we're the best at what we do. What we do behind the scenes, that's what we do. What we do. That is not what we do. Of what we do, but within what we do, successful at what we do. We love what we do.
Oh, I love it.
We're not afraid to pound our chest about it.
That's right.
I'm sure those two are big fans, big listeners. Downloaded every Wednesday. All right, everyone, we have come to the end of this ride, but we thank you all for joining us, and we're going to be back next Wednesday. Again, we did an interview earlier this week with Douglas Pucci from Programming Insider. You can go check that out now. All of Brandon's fine work can be found at WrestleNomics.com, WrestleNomics.substack.com, or if you're a real supporter, Patreon.com/WrestleNomics, where you can get all of his exclusive reporting. Don't wait for it to appear elsewhere. Get it right from Brandon, hot off the presses, market to market comparisons,
and public service announcement. I'm glad for people to share my work. If you post it on Reddit. Post my link to Reddit, please.
It's the least you can do. Okay. Support Brandon Thurston. Okay.
Do your part to encourage, constructive journalism.
I will not be back tonight because there's no Dynamite tonight. Thankfully. I will be doing a post show right after Game 4 when the Toronto Blue Jays eliminate the New York Yankees. No, I will not be, but I will be back on Thursday. Way and I are doing a show on the Post Wrestling Cafe. We are reviewing The Smashing Machine starring Dwayne Johnson and Emily Blunt, which came out this past weekend. This was, This was a well-kept
secret.
Have
you seen it already?
I have seen it. Yeah, I was one of the few. I was one of the few that contributed to its $5.9 million box office open.
Well, it'll get a second run when he wins the Oscar.
Yeah. Have you gone to see it? Will you go see The Smashing Machine?
I saw the documentary like 15 years ago.
I mean, it's very faithful to the documentary. If you are one that goes and like The Iron Claw, and there were certain things that just drove you nuts that were not historically accurate. This is not that. They follow the DVD pretty damn close. The
is
documentary.
There an equivalent of the Ric Flair character in The Iron Claw?
No, but if people remember the polar bear, Paul Varlins, I don't know if that was just like it was their last audition of the day and they just decided, yeah, you'll do. Not exactly. Like, go look up Paul Varlins and then see who they cast for this. And it was quite the depiction that they chose to honor the late Paul Varlins. But yes, that will be
a practitioner of trap fighting.
I believe he was. Yes.
Who could forget?
Yeah, Paul Varlins.
He did some ECW too, right?
He did. Yeah, he did come into ECW to put over Taz as well. Yes. And yes, that will be available postwrestlingcafe.com on Thursday. And then going into the weekend, we'll have a coverage of SmackDown, Crown Jewel, Bound for Glory, which is running at the Songa Center on Sunday night, and then plenty more to come. So you can check out that postwrestling.com, where Brandon Thurston swoops in every now and then and is doing news stories up there as well. And in the weeks to come, we are planning to do a Hall of Fame preview as well. I'm in the midst of putting my ballot together. Are you going to be putting together a ballot this year, Brandon?
I suppose you have acquired a ballot for me, so I will consider it. I will look into it.
I am Brandon's co-host / agent. Okay, I have to I'm just the middleman. That's it for us. Thanks to everyone for tuning in, and we'll be back next Wednesday.